right, I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Dr. Nathan Boucher, who is Director of Graduate Education and an Assistant Professor at Touro College in the School of Health Sciences and the Physician Assistant Program in New York, New York. And the title of his presentation is Beyond the Bedside, Promoting the Palliative Paradigm in the Community.
Great. Thank you. And not Dr.
You know,
Hopefully in the spring, but not right now.
Okay. I should have just said professor. But I'm confident.
Well, excellent. Thank you. I heard a little discussion here about gaps in knowledge about hospice and palliative care. So hopefully we can talk a little bit about that in this very brief session. So thank you very much. Going beyond the bedside, and I think before I begin, I have nothing to disclose. There should be a slide that says I have nothing to disclose. But I want to sort of hold up our policy as almost talking points for when you want to go beyond the bedside and you want to talk to people who are not clinical folks, who are community-based organizations or people or community members. And I think you have an opportunity with our policy or possibly any policy, but with our policy to sort of use that as talking points and guides for you. Straight out of our policy, actually, that we had accepted by the APHA, is talking about promotion. It's all about promotion, and education is a big piece of this, and I think we can use it to promote this paradigm in our communities. And it's in line with Healthy People 2020 goals. And it's about holistic care as well. If only the rest of healthcare, and I'm a clinician myself, if only the rest of healthcare could borrow from the hospice and palliative model of team meetings and consultation and talking with one another, rather than the ninja consultant who comes in and writes a note at 2 a.m. in the ICU EMR and you never meet the person. Am I a little bitter about that? Okay, I'm a little bitter about that. So there's some challenges on both the provider side, which I've certainly spent most of my time on, and then the healthcare consumer side. But then, guess what? There's a human side to this. Nobody enjoys talking about death and dying. It's just a terrible subject for a lot of people to talk about. And we'll discuss that the training is often not very great for health professions trainees in this area. And so they hit the workforce not really being comfortable at all with this, not really being given the tools to deal with, at the end of the day, a difficult subject regardless of your training. I did switch this, but for some reason the star flipped over. But it's supposed to draw your attention to the policy 20134 as a tool to guide education, intervention, and expand understanding. There's a few hurdles here, okay, and we've been working on these for years. But there's a huge paradigm shift when we talk about hospice and palliative care or moving to that paradigm, is that our entire system, education, training, reimbursement, from the ER door, which is shaped like a CAT scanner, and people go right on through, is set on cure. It's set on checking off that little box that says, we fixed it, okay, get the heck out of my hospital, okay? So that's the whole system. However, we're trying to change this from a curative paradigm to a realistic goal setting for a palliative paradigm, and some things get in the way. Okay, one big thing that gets in the way, this article noted below talks about surgeons, but I think it goes to almost all healthcare providers, that there's a fierce ethos of responsibility involved. It's to admit failure, to think that somebody has not benefited from your magical care somehow, and they're still dying from their terminal illness, and that's something to overcome. So coupling a patient's own preferences with the desire to cure and care and support, which is a noble thing, but sometimes we get off base a little bit with regard to patients' goals and family surrogate goals. There's a legal anxiety. There's wrongful life suits and there's wrongful death suits, and are we doing too much or too little? And so people worry about this. Clinicians worry about this when they're checking off the next box on the EMR system for yet another chest X-ray for something or yet another blood test. So we're trying to provide complete care, but there's a little bit of a cover your own involved in there as well sometimes. barriers to providing appropriate care very briefly, and I won't belabor these, but there's a number of studies being done out there or that have been done in the past looking at the timing of advanced directive. At advanced directive inquiry, it's just too late. The patient's an extremist. They're on a hospital bed. They're unconscious. They're coming through the ER doors. They're being brought by the paramedics. They've already been intubated and lined up in the back of the ambulance. And oops, and then they come through the door, and right, this isn't really what they wanted. And maybe there was already a hospice or palliative plan in place, in fact, at home, but somebody missed the boat on that one. But timing of advanced directive inquiry, the Patient Self-Determination Act from 1991 is this, great federal piece of legislature that says that it has to happen in Medicare receiving facilities at the point of contact. But sometimes that's just a terrible, terrible time to start having these, conversations, which need to be conversations and not just one conversation. Lack of third-party reimbursement, that's a real issue. People who spend time counseling patients, really should be reimbursed for this, and that's what led to the whole death panels piece, and then get dropped out of the federal legislature and the now ACA. So that continues to be a piece, but I think we're moving a little closer to that as a possibility. Physician and nurses and other health professions. There's a lot of information on nurses because the nurses are the biggest part of the workforce. So there's a lot of research out there about gaps in their knowledge. But physicians, absolutely, and all health professions have gaps in their knowledge with regard to end-of-life options and the palliative paradigm. So those are things that need to be worked on. Patients themselves don't understand their own advanced directives that may have been written 10 years ago, 15 years ago. The medical technology may have changed since then. Now they have grandchildren, and they're thinking, oh jeepers, I want to be, I want that one last day, whatever it takes, even if there's a tube down my throat and you've already pumped on my chest, I want one last day. So things may have changed, their own views may have changed, and many times they don't understand it, and that's related to health knowledge, general and or health literacy can have an effect on that, and of course implications. They make these big decisions, but don't quite understand the gravity, understandably, until they're actually presented with it. And lack of hospital leadership can be an issue, too. I always half joke, but it's only a 10% joke, that one day I'd like to see, a large hospital system say, hey, listen, if you're dying and you have to die and you need to die in a hospital, this is a great place to do it because we do it well. We support you well. Okay, so I think if there's some good hospital leadership, I think the fish rots from the head, and I think if you have people who are in the know at the top with regard to the palliative paradigm, then things will move a little bit easier down below. Big issue of mine is language and cultural barriers, and there's been a number. And I live and work in New York City, and there's over 800 languages spoken every day in the boroughs. It's a crazy, crazy place to practice and live. It's a great learning lab. and because of that, we are also presented with some interesting challenges with regard to responding to that plurality. So, and not just in New York City, but all over the United States. Again, the Patient Self-Determination Act says that they have to be told as they roll through the hospital doors that they can make decisions for themselves and they can appoint a healthcare proxy, but it's not always in, the 800 languages that are spoken in New York City. You're lucky if it's just in English, and you're lucky if it's, somebody actually has a conversation and doesn't just hand you a form. So that's a real issue. Racial disparity, we know that there's, in hospice and palliative care utilization, there's a huge disparity, especially between blacks and whites, but Hispanic as well, and other groups, and so that's, a big issue to overcome. And a lot of that has to do with education and fear, and there's some long-standing issues. I think if we can figure out what some of these gaps are, and we already know some of the gaps because we just talked about them, we can educate both health professions and communities, and I think we need to do this in tandem so that the two can then sort of meet in the middle with their knowledge and their knowledge and sort of come to the table patients, surrogates, decision makers, and health professionals. I think there's different ways to infiltrate the community of non-hospice, and I'm really big on being the guy who's the hospice and palliative care advocate in a room full of people who don't really know what that is, because I think that's a great point of interface where we can affect some real change. I think some experience that I've had in community-based and senior centers is educating on this issue, educating on healthcare decision-making in general, but also end of life, and utilizing interesting things like role-playing and images and visuals, and this is important for a very multicultural community. Because I think there's different ways that we can get at the senses of learners, okay? Political districts, too, older folks vote, so this should be something of interest to politicians, and I think there's ways, and I've had some interaction, too, in community convocations supported by local politicians, that this is an opportunity to partner up with individuals who are leaders in the community. They may be open to collaboration. I think there's a lot of affinity organizations for this topic, okay, because it deals with ethics, culture, finances, okay, so I think there's a variety of inroads. It's cross-cutting. You can start your own group. I started my own group, which is now part of the Aging and Public Health Section Policy Committee as a work group. So there's different things that you can do, and I encourage you to think of others, okay? You're supposed to fill in that little yellow thing where it says others in your own head. add to the conversation. I think you have an opportunity to add to the conversation, and you can use our policy as talking points for some of this. I think collecting some formative data, there's a lot of exploration that needs to happen, especially when we look at different cultures, and there's not a lot of research. I mean, I'm doing research now in Dominican and Puerto Rican, older adults in East Harlem, and there's just not much, especially in Dominicans, out there with regard to end-of-life decision-making and their views of hospice and palliative care. I think it's kind of a big black box right now, and we need some exploration. So maybe some formative data collection that could be rolled into recommendations for health providers in the area. I set up focus groups and skill building workshops working with Hispanic older adults, and I think that was sort of an approach that one could do. Thank you. Both collect data, but not just pillage the community for data, but also give a little community give back and use that data to inform skill building. Some of the things that we found, themes that we found in that work, major pieces were key facilitators in end-of-life decision-making and health care decision-making, and the focus group participants had a variety of subtopics that they discussed, but a big one, I underline it there, is that they wanted more education. They were scared as all get out by the topic, but they felt like they needed somebody to broach the subject in the community. I think you can target a lot of people. I've talked about this topic with public administrators, with political people, with law professionals, religious organizations, big one to approach. And I think it's cross-cutting, and it requires that multidisciplinary approach as well, okay, because it's ethics, it's law, it's medicine, it's nursing, it's money, okay. I always like to mention money first because that's the one that people like get squeamish about, but I think it's a big part because we all pay into it on some level. So we can promote, and you can use this policy to promote it. It's written right into the policy. There's some great things that you can use as talking points and to catalyze conversations with the community. Get at those collaborators, identify them. Win-win, some community benefit plus data collection is always really good. Multicultural considerations, I think, are incredibly important where I live. And engaging non-hospice and palliative care organizations with your agenda through common linkages. Look to see where those commonalities are. And, again, use our policy. happy to collaborate. If you want to learn more about the focus group and skill building workshops, we just got published in the Journal of Community Health in August, so you can check that out. Thank you very much.